Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Home Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
So I am currently obsessed with this story outside of Texas. Have you guys heard about the... There was an antiques dealer who was shopping at Goodwill 4 years ago, and she found a bust for $35. It was $34.99. There was a little sticker on his cheek. So he was actually an ancient Roman bust, like from before Christ. And because she was an antiques dealer, she kind of knew what she, like, I mean, I don't think she was expecting to find a Roman, ancient Roman, but, you know, like, this is just incredible. But she knew that it was old. And so she's been doing the work and researching, and now he is being returned back to where he came from. So he will be in Texas for a year. They're lending him, it's so funny to call it a him, right? But it's weird calling, anyway. So anyway, this bust. And then he'll go back. Okay, anyway, so so that's the story of this, like, Goodwill find. And I was thinking about that because I love shopping at Goodwill. But I also was looking at this guy, and I'm like, I probably wouldn't have picked him up because $35 is kind of, it's kind of steep for a Goodwill find. Like, I don't know. I'm not really like the style of my house. But incredible that she had the eye and the knowledge and was there at the right time. And now everything is going back to, like, where it should be, right? So I was thinking about her. And thinking about how she was able to see the beauty in this piece, with its provenance and everything, and the value in something that had been so easily discarded, right? Someone had just given it to Goodwill, and she put out like feelers to see if they could find who had donated it, to kind of track down the story of how it got there. They think that after World War II, there was probably a serviceman who picked it up as like a souvenir because it was in Germany and brought it back to the States, but they haven't had any takers. So they don't know exactly how he got to the States. But she saw the beauty and the value in something that had been discarded and overlooked by others. So I want you to just hold on to that thought. Okay, so the BBC network does these shows where people go and live in a time, like a different time. Have you guys seen these things? So I was watching this show. It was like The Return to Mount Snowdonia, and it's in Wales. And they had these people go and live in what was Victorian era smallholder farms. And as I'm watching the show, and they were there for a month, so not a huge amount of time, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, like just the washing, and the milking, and all of the different things that they had to do. There's so much physical, manual labor. So it's funny, because one of the women, it's not like they have the shower, they could hop in the shower, right? So she had washed up for Sunday, and she was feeling a little amorous, a little frisky, and she was like, who has time, though? Like, there's so many things that have to happen. And even on Sunday, like, with her husband, like, the men had to be in church for so many hours, and, you know, there were just so many expectations and responsibilities pulling at them. So I was thinking about how, in the past, I think history has ebbed and flowed. But in our kind of more recent past, like the Victorian era, as husbands and wives have been separated, and we have these manual labors, you know, that have needed to happen, that it has taken our time. And I do not think that it is a coincidence that we now have so many labor-saving devices. We have washing machines and dishwashers and all of these things to kind of help us where we're not like wringing out our laundry, you know, unless our washing machine breaks. That's a bummer, right? We feel the strain when that happens. So we have this time, and I don't think it's a coincidence that this is also the time of the hastening. So I've kind of always thought about technology as helping with the hastening as it comes to exposure. right? Oh, like people can learn about the church through Facebook, or thank goodness for technology to help spread the word throughout the world. And that's amazing. But I didn't think about, thank goodness for technology for helping me in my life have time to study, have time to learn and grow and actually develop relationships at a deeper level and not just, okay, let's keep getting things done. I also think this is one of the beautiful things about homeschooling. You know, we have time that isn't always available for people, and we get to delineate how we use our time. We're not marching to the beat of other drums. We get to figure out what is the most important thing for us. And so these are just some beautiful gifts that we've been given with the time that we live in. Okay, so we're going to tell the tale of two marriages. So we're going to dig into some ideas to strengthen marriages, and in turn, strengthen our covenant communities. I was listening to the John, by the way, Hank Smith podcast, and they had someone on, I don't even remember who it was, but it was a covenant community, right? Like, that's the beauty of a covenant community. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that, I love that. I mean, that's Enoch, right? That's what we want. We want this idea of everyone learning and growing and building Zion in covenant communities. So as a preface, when we start to begin, I made great effort to have my direct quotes, like I've sourced those. But I have learned a lot from the work of Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife and Dr. David Snarsh. So Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife is a Latter-day Saint. David Snarsh is not. But they have an interesting perspective. David Snarsh has written many books and helped found the Crucible Institute for Marriage. And we'll talk about what the Crucible is as relates to marriage in a little bit. And then Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife is a Latter-day Saint, marriage and sexual therapist. So transactional marriages are built upon the notion that I will satisfy your needs and you will satisfy mine. So Dr. John Gottman warns that this can result in keeping a mental running tally of who is doing what for whom, right? Oh, well, they did the dishes, so maybe I need to do, you know, it's this like keeping score type kind of thing. Transactional marriages have their weaknesses, but they've been around for a reason, right? They can also get the job done. And there are times when transactional relationships are kind of the way it happens. I feel like when you're getting ready to go somewhere, and you're like, okay, come on, get your shoes on. Like, that's more transactional, you know? And if your kid asks you, like, the meaning of life in those moments, it's tricky, right? Because you're like, we really have some place to be. So we get to choose, like, how we handle those. And do we want to move into a deeper relationship at that time, or do we need to just, like, keep things moving? So transactional marriages aren't bad, but I would say that they're base level, right? Like, they get the job done, but usually in transactional marriages, we feel like something's missing. We feel like, okay, so we're getting things done and it looks good from the outside, but on the inside, like it might feel, there's just something not there. And some people might feel like, oh, it just has lost its spark, or, you know, I'm not really sure the meaning of the relationship, you know? So things are being done, but it's just a little hollow. Okay. So in an intimate marriage, on the other hand, this is one where people are doing what they do simply because they love their partner and want to do what is best for them. So this is going to feel secure because both people are solid in their own sense of self and they are inviting their partner to know them, truly know them. So intimacy, I really appreciated when I was exposed to thinking about intimacy as into me you see. Right, so it's actually letting people see who you are. So into me, you see, right? Like, I'm gonna actually be open and allow other people to know me. So this is a concept or idea that you might be familiar with the work of Brené Brown. So Dr. Finlayson Fife, so she's funny, because she's like, I love Brené Brown's work. But instead of using vulnerability, so you might have heard this idea of vulnerability, like to be vulnerable is to grow, right? We need to be vulnerable in order to be open. So Dr. Finlayson Fife, instead of using the word vulnerable, because I think we know what vulnerable, like kids are vulnerable, right? Like we need to help protect them because they're vulnerable. Being open is kind of a better word for this willingness to let people see inside of us. So if you've kind of heard Brené Brown's stuff on vulnerability, like, it's amazing. She's done great work. But maybe just thinking about that, I'll be using the word open today to kind of be the same concept of that vulnerability. I made two volunteers who are feeling open. Come on up. Do you have anyone else who's feeling? Okay. So you need to put your stuff down. We're going to do a little demonstration. So I'm going to have you stand like this, facing this way. You're going to face one another. Closer, closer. You're going to put your hands together and lean into each other. So you'll need to be a little closer. So now, shift. Like, move position. While you're leaning into each other.
Oh, okay.
Can you do that? Can you see how... Okay, you can stop. Thank you so much. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you so much. Okay, so if you think of the idea of kind of leaning on each other, then if one person shifts, it gets awkward, right? And the other person can feel insecure. And even the person shifting is like, oh, I don't want to move. Because then if I move, right, is that how that felt, ladies? Like, it's kind of like, okay, who's going to move? How are we going to move? And the other person is kind of always watching the other person to see how they're going to move. Or if they're not, they're kind of doing their own thing. And then the other person's trying to make up for it, right? Okay. So the tricky thing is that an intimate marriage is not necessarily the most comfortable marriage. So this leaning on each other is actually would be more of like a transactional marriage. Okay, I got to finish through. So imagine if they were holding hands, then they could be doing things and shifting and it wouldn't be a big deal, right? Like, they could just do their thing, not a big deal. And completely different than if they were standing on opposite ends of the area, right? Because then they're just detached. They're not working together. Okay. So an intimate marriage can be uncomfortable. So just like when we allow our kids autonomy to make decisions, the process is generally longer. So if you're standing together, like, fixed, then moving, I mean, even if you're watching each other for reference, like, it's kind of an immediate reaction or an immediate response. But if you're holding hands and you're both kind of shifting, then you've got to figure out what do I need to work on, what do I not need to work on, how am I comfortable in this space, and then how in relation to this other person, like, what is showing the most loving thing. I think this will make a little more sense as we go. Okay. So, autonomy. So recently, my youngest daughter gave her first talk in church. And so I helped her by asking questions and giving suggestions and then asking her to dig deeper. Like, have you guys done this process where you're like working with them? Okay, so that's way more work than just writing the talk, right? Like, you know, when they're a sunbeam and you're like, oh, here's your talk. But this, like, helping them figure out who they are and what their voice is a lot more work. It's tempting to just kind of want to do it for them, right? Ah, let me just fix this, right? Okay, so when we let things go and develop, then it can be so much better. So my daughter, when she's giving her talk, one of the things she said jokingly as we're kind of doing this process is she was giving a talk on prayer, and I didn't even remember this line, but in Anne of Green Gables, when Marilla is teaching Anne how to pray, Anne says, "Yours truly, Anne Shirley," at the end of her prayer. And it's this sweet moment, and it's something that she remembered, and she kind of jokingly said, "Oh, you know, that's fine." And I was like, "Oh, put it in your talk. Like, that would be great." And she was like, "No. Oh, that's so embarrassing, you know?" And she ended up, I talked her into it, and it ended up, because it was her, right? Like, it was who she was. And it was hard for her to be open in front of this congregation of people. But she allowed that to happen, and it really touched people. I just really think that, like, my daughter's talk invited the Spirit so much better than if I had told her what to say, because it was hers. And so here she was sharing herself, and it was able to be received, and it was just really beautiful. So I think she has something important to share with the world, just like each of us do. And if we are willing to be uncomfortable, it blesses the world because it helps us truly develop into who we have the potential to be. And this all begins with solid, intimate marriages. And the intimate marriage begins with one person. Okay? What process actually grows a person that wants to be and is able to be in an intimate marriage? Good news. Marriages are the perfect people-growing machines. Specifically, discomfort in marriage. Just think about that for a minute while I share some quotes. This is from Snarsh. We usually think problems with sex and intimacy are caused by how we are uniquely screwed up. I propose instead that they are often caused by being normal. Just think about that. So I'm gonna do some more Snarsh. This is kind of a long quote and I'll break it up as I go through it. Okay, so when you are oblivious to the ways marriage can operate as people growing process, all you see are problems and pathology, and that challenge and the challenges of marriage will probably defeat you. That's harsh, right? So when you are oblivious to the ways marriage can operate as people growing process, all you see are problems and pathology, and the challenges of marriage will probably defeat you. That defeat can look like divorce, obviously, but it can also look like, I mean, we all know people who are in marriages that are just sad, like both of them, where it's just hard, you know? And you just see that tension. Back to Snarsh. Your pain will have no meaning except failure and disappointment. No richness, no soul. That's if we're looking at marriage as a pathology, like problems in marriage as a pathology, okay? Spirituality is the attitude that reveals life's meaning through everyday experience. However, don't bother looking for sanctuary in your marriage. So when I read that, I was like, isn't our home supposed to be a sanctuary? So I think the sanctuary in the marriage, the way that I've broken this up is, like, I believe Snarsh is talking about not looking for marriage to be easy, right? And therefore a sanctuary from all that is hard. But I still think our marriage, and by extension our homes, can be a sanctuary from the world. So that's the distinction I've made. You can work on and see what feels right for you about that. Okay, so this is Snarsh again. Seeking protection from its pains and pleasures. So this is marriage again, right? Seeking protection from its pains and pleasures. And if you think about that, there's the opposition in all things, even in marriage. It's almost like this is a principle that we know is a true principle that we need to work through, right? Opposition of all things. Seeking protection from its pain and pleasure misses its purpose. Marriage prepares us to live and love on life's terms. And if we're looking at celestial marriages, then we're looking at heaven's terms as well, right? So there's something here that we need to learn. And, okay, Snarsh again. Facing relationship realities like these produces the personal integrity necessary for intimacy, eroticism. And so the eroticism used here is not the current, like it doesn't mean pornography or that sort of thing. It just means pleasure of the body. Personal integrity necessary for intimacy, eroticism, and a lifetime loving marriage, or an eternal loving marriage. How is integrity relevant to marriage? So this is Snarsh. How is integrity relevant to marriage? Integrity is the ability to face the realities that I just mentioned. So he mentioned like how marriage is hard, right? And it's a growing machine. Integrity is the ability to face the realities I just mentioned. It's living according to your own values and beliefs in the face of opposition. It is also the ability to change your values, beliefs, and behavior when your well-considered judgment or concern for others dictate it. Putting your partner's goals on par with your own and delaying your agenda accordingly takes and makes integrity. Right, so here we are in a marriage and we've got to make these decisions together, and that takes integrity, but how do you grow your integrity? By doing that, you know, and we're gonna mess it up. Like, we're gonna do things right sometimes and we're gonna do things wrong sometimes, and it's that process and that tension that is what helps us to grow to be who we need to be in order to contribute as much as we can to this world. Okay, putting our partner's goals on par with our own means that we first have to have goals. Second, that we value our partner's goals to the same extent that we value our own goals, not making them higher or lower, not making ours higher or lower. So this isn't like just giving until you're dead because you're so burned out, because you're only considering everybody else. But it's also finding this balance and understanding everybody else's goals are important as well. And it takes more work, right? Just like my daughter's talk. Like, it's much easier to just like tell everyone else what to do or to let someone else tell me what to do. But this process, this tension, it takes time and energy, okay? So if you think about our partner's goals to the same extent that we value our own, not making them higher or lower, so to me, that sounds like The Anatomy of Peace. So if you've read The Anatomy of Peace, if you haven't, read it. It's incredible, by the Arbinger Institute. They have boxes, and they talk about the boxes, right? When we are out of the box, we're acknowledging people's worth as being of value just because they are. Right? Okay. And third, we must look at both goals and weigh them out and choose what works for our higher selves. Okay, so this decision does not have to be the same for both partners. So sometimes when we are trying to make a decision and we're trying to come to consensus, then we feel like we have to have the same decision. But there might be times where you don't have the same decision, and then you get to live and grow in that discomfort. And that actually teaches us about ourselves. So how we handle conflicting answers can be a catalyst for helping grow our integrity. If we self-soothe in healthy ways during the conflict, it will grow us. If we resent our partner for having a different opinion, if we pout, if we sabotage, or we try other forms of manipulation that tugs on our own integrity. Like, we know, right? You know when you're doing that. Like, you know when you just want to get your way, you're trying to kind of manipulate the situation. That tugging on our integrity. The good news is that even in resentment, we can learn about ourselves, right? So when we feel resentment about something, it is a really good indicator that the thing, that thing that we're feeling resentment around is something that we feel like we need to work on. Even if we don't have that conscious thought, just the resentment itself is an indicator that it's something, that it's ourselves inviting ourselves to work on that thing. Gay marriage as people growing machines, right? Okay, so the process of growing looks something like the following as described in the book. Okay, so there is a book, Passionate Marriage, and I always, like, whenever I talk about it, I give a caveat. It has some coarse language. It's not for everyone, and that's by David Snarsh. But there is an Audible book, like it's like a summary. It's actually David Snarsh talking, and it's available on Audible or Libby. You know, you can rent it from the library. So, and that is toned down. Does that make sense? It's like it's more of a summary. I don't remember cursing in that or anything. So, just FYI. So this comes from that Audible. It's not a book, but that audio file or whatever. Okay, so this is David Snarsh again. First, so this is like how we handle that discomfort, okay? First, you get quiet because you hit gridlock. And then coming out of that, because your integrity demands that you stand up, and that's when you speak. What to you is the truth. And you don't expect your partner to validate you. And you stand up and you say things. And by the way, when you do that, you're usually not calm, and you're usually not safe and secure, and you're not feeling everything that most of us would like to think we'd ever feel in marriage. You're usually frightened, and it's sort of an electric time. And it means that the part of you has come forward that most of us never hear about in marriage. Your integrity is the backbone of your relationship, not your fears. So the best in you cannot only handle it, it's what the best in you has to hear. Because when your integrity stands up, you not only can move mountains, you might even be able to move yourself. Immobilize yourself to do things that make you nervous. So I love that. You might not only be able to move mountains, you might even be able to move yourself. I think sometimes I'm my own hardest thing to move, right? So there's this rare time when I was super frustrated with my husband, right? And I like got that negative self-talk going in my head. And this inspiration came to me. He cannot change what he justifies.
And I was like, oh yeah, that's right, you know.
And then I felt a little smug, and I was like, yeah, that's right, okay. And then in a heartbeat or two, the spirit was like, very clearly asked, what are you justifying? Right? You feel that. You're like, oh, yeah. Smug kind of floats away. And I hit really close to home. So I cannot change what I justify. Okay? So I'm going to go into this justification a little bit. So to justify means to prove or show to be just, to defend or maintain. So we are justified in Christ. He's already done it. So that we can look at ourselves honestly. We don't need to justify ourselves. So when we are justifying ourselves, that is our pride that's speaking. Because we're taking on ourselves what is the Savior's role. He's already done it, so we don't need to do it ourselves. So I think that we know, you can kind of feel the difference, I think. I mean, when you've done something and it was honestly just you're doing your best versus when you've done something and you're like, oh, well, they shouldn't have done this and that's why I did it, right? So that's that justification. When we honestly make mistakes, I mean, we're all growing, we're all human, like, thank goodness, right? We can apologize, we can learn, we can move forward. That's not the justification process. But when we get really rooted and strong, like, I am right and this is why, like, that's that justification. Okay? So now we're going to do another demonstration. I'd like someone to come up. I'm going to do this one with them. You're not going to have to touch anybody. Yeah, come on up. Come on up, Char. You're going to come over here. And we are going to stand back to back. Got it? Mm-hmm. Okay. So turn around.
Turn around and face me. Mm-hmm.
Turn around and face me.
Okay. What am I supposed to do?
It's a big question, right? What do you do? There's a tension in looking at somebody's back, right? Like, it's kind of weird. Okay. Thank you, Char. I'll explain. Okay. The BYU Maxwell Institute podcast titled Loving Dangerously featured Chad Ford, the author of Dangerous Love. So he was talking about, he actually works on conflict around the world, and he works in association with the Arbinger Institute. So he talked about doing this demonstration, and Char, he was saying, like, so when you have two people standing back to back and you say turn around, everyone comes to the front, right? Okay, look at me. So then when the other person turns, then sometimes the other people will keep like trying to go in front, right? Like turn around, like that's. But then at some point you just realize all you can do is turn yourself around. And if the other person's turned, I mean, what are you gonna do? But if you have someone just staring at your head, like it gets a little uncomfortable, right? Like there's this tension. And it's uncomfortable when you're doing it, looking at them, because you're like, okay, like here I am. But then it's also uncomfortable as the person who's not like addressing the other person. Does that make sense? So there's this tension that creates a draw. Okay, so when we're working on ourselves and looking at our own hearts, taking responsibility in a healthy way, it leads us to want to grow, just like as it can lead that wanting to turn. Okay? Human beings by nature are creative. We want to grow, we want to learn, we want to create. I mean, you watch your kids, like you know this is what they do. The process of differentiating from those who are close to us is a tool of maturity. It helps us to mature, right? And that helps us to create new meanings in our relationships. So this is Snarsh again. Marriage always holds your partner's happiness hostage, and the price of ransom is always your development. Marriage is designed to take the worst of you and twist it around to make it the best, to make the best in you stand up. It's almost like this process is helping us to become more celestialized, right? And if you think about like our weaknesses can become strengths, this is where we're at. Okay, so what is differentiation? So differentiation is the process by which we become uniquely ourselves, maintaining ourselves in relationship with those we love. As we had this demonstration of the two people, when they are leaning on each other, they're enmeshed, right? Their movements are reliant upon one another. But if they're just holding hands, then they can be solidly who they are, independent of the other person, but still connected. And if they're standing far away from each other, then they're just separate, alone, alienated, right? Okay, when we depend on someone else for our own sense of self, we will always become insecure. So differentiation is not being apart, right? So it's not being so enmeshed that we can't move without it jostling everything, and it's not being separated. How does this help change things? So if we're differentiated, we are no longer looking to the other person to change. We're developing ourselves and finding our own integrity. This leads to security because we know that we can trust ourselves. Jordan Peterson said something to the effect of that we should always be honest because at some point things are gonna get hard and we need to be able to trust ourselves to get through it. That's integrity, being able to trust ourselves. And differentiation is like humility. So if you're going around thinking how differentiated you are, then you most likely are not, right? Like, you're like, oh, I'm so humble, right? Okay, so it's a lifelong process. It's not a destination. So it's like education. If you're doing it right, you're continually being educated, right, throughout your life. There's no finish line that has a stamp on your head that says, oh, you're educated, right? And there's no stamp that says, oh, you're differentiated. But in different situations, right, in the tension of marriage, we're invited to make a differentiated choice as we move forward. And I kind of wonder if it's something like, you know, like in parenting, when you're like, oh man, you have this kid that you're struggling with, and every now and then you get it right. And you're like, oh yeah, and then you might get it right more often than not. And you're like, okay, this is good. And then it's like, oh yeah, okay. So I feel like that is true with marriage, with differentiation as well. Sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't. And that's part of the learning process. Okay, so there are four ideas of differentiation. And this is Snarsh again, and this is in that audio. So four ideas of differentiation. One, the ability to maintain a clear sense of self of who you are while you are close to the people who are important to you because they are going to pressure you to conform. Right, that's human nature. We want people to be like us. So we gotta figure out who we are. And then we gotta be able to hold on to that while we have that pressure. Snarsh again, this is part of that first idea. Communication is not a virtue if you can't stand the message. Being able to stand the message involves being clear about who you are. When you are clear about who you are, you can also tolerate the message of who you aren't yet. So in our marriages, right, who's the best person to tell us what we need to work on? And sometimes it's not always in a great way, and we get to choose how we deal with that, right? The message of who we aren't yet. Number two, the ability to self-soothe, the ability to regulate your own anxiety. This is Snarsh. So learning to regulate your anxiety is one of the most loving things you can do for the people around you. It makes you capable of putting your love into action. Loving is the benefit of the loved one. Learning to take care of yourself is what gives the people you love freedom, because it means they don't have to stick around to prop you up. So, you know, I work in the women's health field, and I read this article, and I haven't dug deeply into it yet, but I've been like just kind of musing over it. And it said that women who are going through menopause, if their only identity is that of mother. Now, I mean, we can have a lot of identities, and I'm not saying motherhood is not a strong identity. But if your only identity is that of mother, then menopause can be harder because you're really losing a part of yourself, a part of your ability. I was like, ooh, that's an interesting one. Third idea of differentiation, learning to control your own reactivity. Snarsh again, because that is what, so learning to
Learning to control our own reactivity is what allows us to get close. For a lot of us, the way we keep our reactivity down is we disinvest. So think of the people like standing across from each other, right? Totally not connected at all. If we don't care, then we don't get reactive. But differentiation is about what lets us get close to each other. The ability to calm yourself, lick your own wounds, soothe your own heart, take care of yourself, and stay clear about who you are. Some people say, I'm entitled to my feelings, and that we basically, what we basically say to them is, that's right, you deserve them, and you ought to keep them. Well, that's a little different than some. When I said that to my daughter the first time, she was like, oh. What did you just say to me? Anyway, that was really... Yes, you deserve them, and you ought to keep them. And that's not what people are expecting. The language of, I'm entitled to my feelings, is really, I'm entitled to regulate everyone around me so that I don't end up with feelings I don't want. Well, this one sits true for me. You can still feel your feelings, but it's that self-soothing part, not telling everybody else what you're feeling, expecting them to soothe you and fix it and create different things. Marriage is designed as this incredible process that will take those limitations and force you to grow up to know who you are and be able to regulate your own heart and take care of your own anxieties, which is the hallmark of an adult, not our neediness. Both loving and marriages and becoming an adult is much tougher than people have been led to believe. So it's funny when people are getting married. It's kind of like when people are having a baby. Like, you hear the horror stories, or you hear everything is wonderful. But do you hear the, like, it's a lot of work, but it's a great work. Okay, so the fourth idea is the willingness to tolerate the discomfort for growth. The very thing that would make you think that you got a terrible relationship is exactly the way that healthy relationships work. Now, I mean, obviously, abuse is not that. Right, so this is within the normal guidelines. Any questions or anything about that? It's kind of a lot. Yes?
I have a question about the self-soothing. What does that look like?
I think everyone has their own style, and I think that that's part of the tension that we get to do. But I think self-soothing, like, I think it's okay to say, I'm having a hard time right now, I'm gonna go work on myself for a while, right? Some people will meditate, pray, take a quick bath, run. It's whatever can help you realign and figure out what is best, what is your highest self in that moment. Does that make sense? This is starting to kind of think about, what does this look like? So sometimes the self-soothing is, I need 10 minutes. Can we take a break and come back? Or I need a day, you know? Depending on what the conflict is, or, you know, what's going on, it can be really helpful to have like a time point in which you will work on that thing if it needs to be worked on. Sometimes you just need time. It's tricky. And I think like volumes have been written on this, right? And so I think it's part of the process of what, I have a daughter who on her mission, she was having a really hard time with one of her companions. And so her mission president was like, what do you do at home? Like, what do you do? And she's like, well, I play the piano. And he's like, go play the piano once a day. You know, and she would have an hour session on the piano, and that would help her re-regulate. Does that make sense? Her new mission president doesn't like that, but she's not having as hard of a time. So she's had to figure out other things, right? So that worked out in that moment, and now she gets to figure out other things. I think throughout life, it might look different, too. When you have little kids, it might look different than when you have older kids. You know, my youngest they're at conference this year, right? So they're doing their own thing. So that looks different than when I had babies. You know, I can step away a little more readily. Okay, validation. Let's talk about validation. If you're looking for others' validation to tell you that you are doing it well, then it's antithetical to the differentiation process. Validation is not a bad thing. Good relationships have high validation. Yet the most important and absolutely essential validation is self-validation. So if you say to your spouse, okay, so I wrote this example. I don't know if I love this example. Maybe you guys have better examples. But if you say to your spouse, like, oh, you don't tell me that I'm beautiful. And then he's like, oh, you're beautiful. And you're like, it doesn't count. Right? Like, you all know, like, if you're like, oh, I told you to do it. Like, that doesn't count. And then he's like, okay, how many days can it be until I tell her she's beautiful and then it will count, right? That you can throw that transactional feeling there, okay, of that, like, keeping score. But if you said something like, and I was trying to figure this out, and again, like, it's a process, so I don't have it perfectly, so maybe you guys can think of something better. But so if you said something like, you know, honey, in the past, I've not really made the time to think about my appearance, but currently I'm working on developing my sense of style, and I would love it if you would help me by letting me know if different outfits I'm wearing are attractive to you. Is that something that you're comfortable helping me with? So the soft tone, the openness, that makes a difference. I know this example isn't for everyone, right? Like, we all have our own things or whatever. And it's, but the openness and how you say it makes a difference. It's absolutely imperative that you can hear their answer. You know, what if they're like, no, I don't want to. And you're like, oh, damn it. You know? But that's who they are. Like, it's okay. And so then you get to self-soothe. You get to figure out how you move forward with that. It's a losing strategy to ask the question and expect him to say yes, and then get mad if he says no. So it's also a losing strategy if he accepts, he's like, oh yeah, let's do that. And then you micromanage and poke and prod him and then keep, you know. At any time, he can change his stance, and that's okay. And when you are truly living in your integrity, you are self-validating and secure with the uncertainties of those around you. April Conference, the talk by Elder Christofferson, A Relationship with God. This talk talks about differentiation. If you want to know what differentiation is, listen to that talk and apply it to your marriage. I have just some things that I've taken out of it. So this is all from Christofferson. So this is God speaking to Job. Wilt thou condemn me that thou mayest be righteous? Or in other words, will you condemn me that you might be justified? So do we do that with our spouses? We condemn them so that we can be right or justified. Okay, here's another point. So this is Christofferson. Some misunderstand the promises of God to mean that obedience to him yields specific outcomes to a fixed schedule. We ought not to think of God's plan as a cosmic vending machine. I love that so much. We do our best, but we must leave to him the management of blessings, both temporal and spiritual. Same with our relationships, right? Just because we're doing something doesn't mean that we're going to get an immediate response or, you know, get immediately what we want. Christofferson, this path cannot be easy for any of us. There is too much refining needed for it to be easy. The process of God-directed purging and purifying will of necessity be wrenching and painful at times. So like when our marriages are wrenching and painful, do we think we're broken? Right? But it's of necessity wrenching and painful at times. In the midst of the refiner's fire, rather than getting angry with God, get close to God. Ooh, rather than getting angry with our spouses, get close to them. That's a little terrifying. Call upon the Father in the name of the Son. Walk with them in the Spirit, day by day. Allow them over time to manifest their fidelity to you. Come to truly know them and truly know yourselves. Christofferson, consider some examples of faithful men and women who trusted God, confident that his promised blessings would be upon them in this life or in death. Their faith was based not on what God did or did not do in a particular circumstance or moment in time, but by knowing him as a benevolent Father and Jesus Christ as their faithful Redeemer. In the end, it is the blessing of a close relationship, an abiding relationship with the Father and the Son that we seek. It makes all the difference and is everlastingly worth the cost. Does that apply to our marriages? Marriage always holds your partner's happiness hostage, and the price of ransom is always your development. Marriage is designed to take the worst in you and twist it to make the best in you stand up. So we never talked about physical intimacy. If we aren't enjoying a healthy sexual relationship in our marriages, then we are doing our children a great disservice. Even without knowing details of any kind, our kids can map. So mapping is kind of, they feel it, right? They feel what's going on.
Our kids can map and track our emotions and attentions on where we stand on sexual relationships. These are times in which the world, which words mean very little. For example, there was someone who was, his father had an affair and he ended up having an affair. He never even knew about his father's affair, but it was just something that wasn't really worked out. It wasn't processed through, and it can just keep going without anyone even really talking about it. Okay, Kimball, Spencer W. Kimball said, marriage can be more of an exultant ecstasy than the human mind can conceive. It is within the reach of every couple and every person. So ask yourselves as you leave today, is your marriage an exultant ecstasy? Well, that's kind of a high word, right? That's kind of a cool thing to think about. And then to finish, this is Jennifer Finlayson Fife. To be knowable, to let yourself be known, that is where you feel real joy. Intimacy is at the core of even our notions of the celestial. It's really what's at the core of transcendent sexuality. It is a deep connection to others in a trusting relationship with yourself as with others. So just like the woman at the Goodwill, she knew what she was looking for. She knew what she had. Like, if we have celestial marriages, if we know what we're looking for, if we know what's there, we know what's available to us, then we can do the work to figure out where that comes from, and it will add to our own happiness and growth, but it will also add to our families, to our covenant communities, and that is what we need in this day and age.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.